I would now like to introduce the main speaker for the evening, and it's Donna S. from Escondido.
My name is Donna, and I am a grateful alcoholic. Welcome to the newcomers. If you're an alcoholic, you're in the right place. And when I first got here, someone told me that you only have to answer one question to know if you're an alcoholic. Are you now, or have you ever been in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? If you can say yes to that question, you're probably in the right place. So welcome. Happy birthday to John and Janice. And my journey began with my drinking. I was about 16 years old, and I didn't wake up in the morning and aspire to be an alcoholic. That wasn't, I had dreams of getting married and having children and a white picket fence, and everything would be wonderful. And that's not how I felt most of the time. At 16, I felt that my older sisters, they were pretty, and they were social, and I wasn't. I didn't feel like I fit in my own family. So I began drinking. I remember the first time that I drank beer with a couple of friends of mine, and we went to the local teenage dance. And when I got there, I felt different this time. I felt different than I'd ever felt at that dance, and I'd been going every Friday night for a couple of years. And that night, because I drank, I felt better. I just was social, I was dancing, I was having conversations with people, and I knew that alcohol was going to be magic for me. I didn't know I was going to become an alcoholic, but I did know it was going to be magic for me. I was married the first time. I was 18 years old. I married an alcoholic with potential. And we stayed together for about a year, and I had to leave because it wasn't working. It wasn't good. And besides, I wasn't faithful. So, but he didn't know, so he was the bad guy. So let's see, then my history is a lot about taking the pain away of feeling of who I am, running from it, hiding from it. If it didn't feel good, I was out of there, stuffing it so that I couldn't tell what it was, and that's where alcohol helped me a lot. At the age of 22, I met my soon-to-be second husband in a bar, and we got married. We got married, we moved to Virginia, and that's where I had my daughter, who I love very much. During that time, he was a submarine sailor, and so he would go out to sea for a couple of months, and while he was gone, I was having a good time. I wasn't faithful to him as well, but he didn't know, so it was okay. I had a few marriages, and as I go along, you'll see. The one thing, because if alcohol was going to fix me, then a man could fix me, marriage could fix me, kids could fix me, and nothing seemed to fix me. So I just had to keep doing those same things over and over, expecting different results. And that's what I did. The one thing that I did differently from a lot of people is I didn't get any divorces in between. I had a lot of stuff to clean up when I got here. My second husband, he got to the point where he didn't trust me. He didn't like going out to sea anymore. He had a feeling something was going on. He didn't quite know what it was, but he wasn't trusting me. And so the next time his boat went out, he stayed, and he went AWOL. We moved back to my hometown, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we lived there. That's where I got pregnant with my second child, my son, who I love very much. And things didn't work out with us. There was a time when I was tired of him. I was tired of the fighting. I was tired of everything. So I told him to leave. I told him to get out. We were done. And he did. And he met someone else. And I wanted him back. So that didn't happen for a while. But we did get back together. And then we did break up again. There was a lot of men after that. No marriages for a long time. But a lot of men after that. A lot of drinking. And life just wasn't going well at all. When we finally did get back together, we moved out to Virginia, back to Virginia. He turned himself in, and they discharged him with a dishonorable discharge. When we got married, I was almost ready to have my daughter. And when we got divorced, I had my son and my daughter. In Virginia, things weren't working out there, so we moved to California, where my parents were. We're gonna, you know, make a new life, start over, be together, have that white picket fence, and things were gonna be great. We came to California, and that's not how it worked out. We split up, and we had a friendship between us by this time. We kind of helped each other to end that relationship. You know, we used to walk on the beach together and talk, but we weren't together anymore. But we just kind of did that, and somehow we stayed friends. And that was really good for the kids, that we stayed friends. But there came a time when we both had to move on from that, and so we did. And that's when things really got going for me as far as my drinking. That's when I started drinking in the bars in Oceanside and dating Marines. And I thought that I was a good mom. And the reason I thought I was a good mom was because I didn't go out until the kids were sleeping. And I always made it home before they woke up. Sometimes it was just minutes. But I always got home before they woke up. I used to try to think about how I was going to get to the next drink, and I had a friend that she was my roommate, and she told me that she thought I was an alcoholic. She said, "I don't know if you are, but I think you're becoming one." I was pretty much drinking every night in the bars. She said, I knew that she knew what an alcoholic looked like because her mom was one. And her mom hid bottles all over the house, and I knew she knew what an alcoholic looked like. So I got a little scared, and I stopped drinking. But that's when I did the switching part that they talk about in the third chapter. And so I switched from alcohol to meth. And that way I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, and I was only doing that, just fun stuff, you know, and just, you know, popping a few pills, you know, just to, you know, stay awake long enough to get the house cleaned or whatever it was to get to my job. I was off and on a functional, and I could work for a little while. Most of the time I was on welfare while my children were growing up. There were times when I left my kids with babysitters and didn't come home for a few days, and I always thought that was because I was a bad person. I thought I just couldn't make a good decision. I thought it was because I was a bad person. I didn't know that that I had alcoholism, and so that was that was hard to get through, thinking that I was a bad person. It was hard to raise my kids that way. They weren't lucky enough to have been taken from me like a lot of women today that their kids are taken. My kids became adults through my alcoholism. And there were times when I would leave them for a few days. There was a time when I went to, I was living at my mom and dad's house, and I had a fight with my brother, and so I left because he was going to kill me. And I left, and I didn't come back for 3 months. And I loved these kids more than life, and I couldn't not make those bad decisions. I couldn't do it. I wanted to be better. I wanted things to get better, but I just couldn't do it. There was always something else that kept me from doing that, and I thought it was because I was a bad person. I thought I didn't know how to be a good person. I grew up a Catholic, and, you know, made confirmation, communion, confirmation, all of that stuff, you know. So I knew there was a God. And I always used him as the pinch hitter. If he could just get me out of this one, just get me out of this one, it'll be okay. When I left my kids for 3 months, when I finally came back, it was my brother that I had had the fight with that came looking for me. And he says, "Your kids really need you." Sorry, I didn't know that was going to happen. And he says, "I don't care what happened between us." He says, "You need to come home because your kids need you." And so I came home. And that my children were in grammar school at that time. When I got home, my mom had told me about that my son had asked her if he could, he was in, you know, they had that DARE program going on in schools, and he asked my mom if he could go put in everybody's mailbox on the street to, no, don't use drugs. And my mom told me that. During that time, it was pretty bleak. I wasn't on welfare anymore. I didn't know how to go get a job, and things just weren't getting any better. I eventually did move out from my mom's house, moved in with another roommate, met another man, got married again, no divorces. This is the third marriage, and he was in the Marines, and we were just going to get married, you know, for the money thing. And, you know, I was going to still collect my welfare, not tell them I was married. And then he was going to get extra money for being married. And so we did that. And I think he got extra money, but I didn't seem to make out in that deal at all. Not financially, anyway. And when it came time for him to get out, he was going back home. And he was going to come back. And he just needed to go home for a while. And the more I talked to him on the phone, the less it was getting likely that he was coming back. And so he asked me to fly out there. He said he would buy my ticket, and he wanted me to fly out there to Minnesota. So I did. And it was the worst week of my life. I didn't get to meet any of his friends or his family. Nothing. And I couldn't understand why he flew me out there. And, well, I kind of knew because he asked me to bring dope with me. So when I got back home, I called him up and I said, "Don't you think that was an awful expensive piece of ass?" I said, "You could have gone downtown Minnesota and got that, you know." And so that's when I knew that was, I was done with that. He was my last marriage for a very long time. I dated a lot of men. I lived with a lot of men, but he was my last marriage. I wasn't going to do that again. And I used to tell everybody I'm just staying married to remind me not to do it again. But that wasn't true because I hadn't divorced any of them. That was just my excuse. So there was a time when my daughter was in high school. And while she was in high school, I was spiraling down fast. I would pick her up from high school. She was going to high school in the town next to us because that's where she'd been going. And then,
excuse me, is there a nurse in here? Yeah.
So there, excuses. You know, I drive over and pick her up from high school, and one day I showed up, and it was about, she got out of school at about 3, and it was about 5 o'clock, and it was the winter time, so it was really starting to get dark. And I pull up, and she's just sitting on the lawn waiting for me, just sitting there on the high school lawn waiting for me. And I told her that my watch stopped. That was pretty lame, but that's what I did, and I didn't matter. None of that mattered. I wanted to be a good mom. I wanted to be there on time. I wanted to pick my kids up on time. I didn't want to leave them and not come back for months or for days or any of those things. I wanted to be better, and I couldn't. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. I didn't know that it was going to be... let me tell you that John and I have something in common when he was telling his story, because I call my intervention that it happened through God and the Vista Sheriff's Department, because that's where I went to jail. And I was in jail. I was in there for a while, and my sister, I kept calling her to try and bail me out. And this wasn't the first time I'd been to jail. I'd been to jail years before when my children were really a lot younger, and I could only see them through glass and talk to them on the phone, and that was over drugs, and that was a hard time, and here I was again in jail. And so I called my younger sister. My son was at home. He was in high school at that time, and he was at home where I lived with my roommate, who was also in jail. And so, you know, there were people just taking care of all the kids, people we knew, just taking care of all of the kids. I'd call my sister every evening and say, bail me out, please bail me out. I'd be crying on the phone, begging her to bail me out. And I had her promising me by the end of the phone call that she would have me bailed out by morning. And I would wake up in the morning and wait all day, and I'd call her again in the evening. And I'd scream and holler at her and say, don't promise me if you can't do it. And she said, I can't do it. And by the end of the phone call, I had her promising me again that she would bail me out. When it finally happened, during that time while I was in jail, there was this girl that was in jail with me, and she was reading the Bible. And I call them jailhouse Bibles. They have any kind of emotion you could ever feel all on the back of the Bible, and then it tells you what verse to go to read to help you to get through that. And she gave me a Bible, and I began to read it. So finally, my sister, I called her for the last time. During that time, I had also gone for a bail review, but they wouldn't let me out because I had a lot of traffic warrants too, and my traffic warrants were like much higher than it would have been to bail me out on the drug charge. But so I begged her again to bail me out, and she said that she couldn't do it. And I said, I know you can do it. I know that your husband has the money, because he was selling dope. So I knew he had the money. And she says, Donna, he said he won't do it because you had his stuff when you went to jail, and it's gone. So that was when I really put it in there, and I says, well, you tell him he already got paid, because I didn't give up his name. And the next day I was out of jail. And so it worked. It worked. During the time I was there, I heard about this place out in Escondido. I'd known about it because a friend of mine had gone there for 3 months. It was a rehab. And so I knew it was there, and I was going to go and get out there and interview and get in there before I went for my sentencing, and everything was going to be okay. So I stopped using drugs at this time. I still lived at home with my roommate, people in and out all the time, and I didn't pick up and use again. And I don't know how I did that, except that every second, some days, every second, I asked God to help me. I said, please, just don't let me do that, because if I do, I'm going to go right back down, and I'm going to be right back hooked, and nothing's going to change. So I did that, and what happened next was that just got lost. See, it happens to everyone, John. So I did go out to Serenity House in Escondido, and I interviewed, and the woman that interviewed me told me that she would suggest that I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told her, I says, but I'm not an alcoholic. And she says, but you can go there, and it's a really good program. So why don't you try it? So I thought I could do that. I have I had a supervisor. I had to call her because I had a job. I'd had it for like 7 years now. So at this time, I was really functional during that time until the intervention thing happened. But I called her from jail and told her that I told her that I was in jail and I wouldn't make it into work. Actually, I had to call her at home, and I didn't know her number, so I called my sister, who called her, and I got her number and called her at home. And I told her everything that happened. I told her the truth. I told her everything that I was in there for, and I apologized. And before I get out, when I went to my bail review, she was the only one I knew, and she was sitting out in the audience, you know, out in the chairs out there, and I couldn't believe she was sitting there. And so once I get out to Serenity, and they tell me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first meeting I went to was the Vista Central meeting, and I got there, and I sat in the back of the room. I was supposed to meet someone there, but it was like a big room like this, and I didn't know anybody, and I couldn't talk to anybody because I hadn't been drinking. And so I just sat in the back of the room. I didn't ask for this woman that was supposed to meet me there. I just sat in the back of the room, and I listened, and I didn't go back to AA. I just didn't think it was for me. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. And during that, so I was still on the list, though, to go to the Serenity House. And during that time, I went to the other program because I knew I had a problem with that. I knew that. And during that time, I was still living at home, still people going in and out of the house, still it was extremely hard. I was still working. I was going to work. She let me come back to work. After I told her everything I'd done and I'd been in jail, she let me go back to work. And she supported me. You know, she went to the people above her and told them what was going on, and they didn't want me to go back. And she went to bat for me and said, I want her back. And she gave me, so I went back to work. It was so difficult. Every day was really, really hard. I didn't know what to do. I was going crazy. I was going to the other program, and it was helping, but there was something that was missing, and I didn't know what it was. And it finally came to the point where I had been calling this rehab for about 3 months and waiting for that bed. And about 2 weeks before I went in, I stopped working. Really hard thing I had to do was I pretty much knew that it was going to come, and I had to train somebody to do my job. And that was kind of hard, but he was a wonderful man, and we became very good friends. And so 2 weeks, and I had to quit because I couldn't work anymore. I just went in, and I was crying all the time. Finally, the phone call came, we have a bed for you. And I was so relieved because the next day I was going to court for my sentencing. So I got to the Serenity House and still had a plan. During the time that I was waiting to get into the Serenity House, I drank a few times because I wasn't an alcoholic. So got to the Serenity House. Had to go to court the next day. My plan was to be there for the 3 months that they required you to be there, and then I would be going home, and life would get good again, and I could make some good decisions, and I wouldn't be a bad mom anymore, and life was going to finally be good, because after all, now I'm 40, you know, and this has gone on since I was 18. So the next day I went to court, and the judge had a different plan for me. He said that I would be at Serenity House for a year. He told me that I'd be there for a year, and if I left, I'd be doing that year in jail. Well, I know somebody that took the other option, and I took this option of going to Serenity House. So I was just really grateful to be there. I wasn't freaked out. I wasn't emotional. My son was living with my aunt and my uncle. My daughter was on the East Coast by now. She's a grown woman, and she's living on the East Coast. And so I began my journey in recovery. That's when it all started for me. September 14th, 1994 is when I walked into that recovery home. And that's the date that I used for my sobriety date, because I didn't know the last time that I drank that it was going to be an important day. I didn't know that. I knew that July 13th, that was an important day, because that was the day that I woke up in jail, and I never used again after that. So I was using that for my sobriety date, even though I'd known I had drank. But it didn't matter, because I wasn't an alcoholic. During this time, I met one of my dearest friends, and we're still friends today. We were in a room together there, and she asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting with her. And I said, is it AA or NA? And she said, it's AA. And I said, I'm not an alcoholic. And she said, have you ever drank? And I said, well, duh. And she said, then you can say you're an alcoholic. And so I went to this meeting with her. And from the time I walked into this meeting, it was a meeting that happened every morning at 7 a.m. And from the moment I walked into that meeting, I knew there was something in there that I wanted. I didn't know what it was yet, but I knew there was something in there that I wanted. Everybody was laughing, and they were telling their stories and laughing about them. You know, and they were telling parts of my story, and I didn't think it was very funny still. And but they started doing it, and they could laugh at themselves for it. And that I knew that was something that I might want. You know, I might want to have laughter back in my life, because I hadn't laughed in a long time. After I'd been sober for a little while, my mom came to see me, and she said that she hadn't seen my eyes smiling for a long time. So during this time, I went to this meeting every morning for about 6 months. And during that time, I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I was still planning on when I left that I'd be able to drink. But I could not drink while I was there, because I'm not an alcoholic. So I was sitting in this meeting one morning, and there was this guy that was sitting there, and he was there every morning too, and he was cranky, and he was old, and he had a lot of sobriety, and he was talking about alcoholics that try and kill themselves. And he said that they jump out of basement windows, and they try to hang themselves with yarn. And I thought back to the time when I had thrown my husband out, and he had gone with another woman. And part of the plan to get him back, well, it wasn't even a plan to get him back. I think I really wanted to do this. So I went to the bar he was working at. I told him I was going to kill myself, and I left. And I went to the bridge. He called my parents. They were out looking for me. I watched them. I hid behind the pillars on the bridge, and I watched my parents drive by. And they finally stopped driving by, and that's when I stepped out and I went to the middle of the bridge, and I put my leg up over, and I didn't jump. I was pretty drunk, but I didn't jump because I couldn't swim. So it was that meeting, just something as simple as that, that I absolutely positively knew that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was never going to get to drink again. I knew that my life was going to start to change. And when I found out that I was an alcoholic, I was so relieved. I was relieved to know that I was an alcoholic and I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't a bad mom, a bad daughter, a bad friend, a bad sister. I knew that I wasn't any of those things anymore. I was an alcoholic. I had a disease, and it had control of me. All of my life it had. And that's when I first admitted that I was an alcoholic. So that's when I really could start hearing things. That's when I began to be able to laugh at myself. And I was only 6 months of sobriety. That's when I got a sponsor. I began to take the steps. I actually had several sponsors and began to take the steps several times. And I didn't know if I was going to get to stay here or not, because I didn't know if I could be honest. I didn't know if I could be completely honest. I didn't know if I could take those steps, because they said that you had to be rigorously honest. And I'd never been honest in my life. So I didn't know I was going to get, I didn't think I was going to get to stay. And I put the steps off, and I put them off, and I put them off for about 3 years. And then something happened, and something hit me, something I heard in meetings, and I knew that if I didn't take the steps, I was going to drink again. And that would make me a bad person, because now I had a solution. And if I didn't take that solution, I don't think that I would have made it through life. So that's when I did take the steps. I got a sponsor, and I took the steps, one after the other. I didn't stop at 3, skip over to 5 or 6, or, you know. And since then, I've been continuing to take the steps. I've now had the same sponsor for many years. She's Michaelina F., and she has 25 years of sobriety. And she does things like go speak at meetings, and she'll all of a sudden, like a month later, I'll get a call and say, "Would you speak at our meeting?" And I said, Michaelina's been there. That's what she does for us. She wants us all to be connected and to have service commitments. She showed me the way on how to keep getting better, not to stay stagnant, to be of service, to come when somebody asks you to speak at a meeting, you go and speak. When you have a service commitment, you know, you get on a H&I panel like that lady was talking about down there. You get on an H&I panel, and somewhere somebody is going to hear the message. They're going to hear something that someone said, and it's going to make them know that they can stay. Because it happened to me just like that, just one morning, and it was something silly, and but I knew from the deepest part of me that I was an alcoholic, and that's when I finally got to know that things were going to change. I have 7 sisters and 4 brothers, and during my alcoholism, after I had moved out here to California, there was good part of them that were back there. And the ones that were back there, I really hadn't talked to in probably 7 or 8 years. Hadn't called them on the phone, hadn't done anything. And so I finally was able to connect back to my family. After 3 years sober, I moved back to New Hampshire. I wanted to spend some time with my folks. They were getting on in age, and I wanted to spend some time with them sober. So I went back there and lived for a year. That's where I got busy, and I took all of the steps with my sponsor there. And after that, I moved back here because there was someone back here that I loved. I got back here and asked Michaeline to be my sponsor and kept taking the steps. You know, I've had a lot of emotional bottoms in sobriety, and when I do that, I take a step. When I'm doing something and it's not right, I'll call my sponsor, and she says, "Well, you know, you need to do some 10-step work. Get busy and start writing, and we'll talk about it." You know, and she's always sending me to the big book. She's always sending me to places to read in the steps, and you know, it can be places that I've read 1,000 times since I've been sober. And there's always something when I'm in that place. There's always something that new that pops out at me that makes sense, that it becomes a solution for my life. How could anyone not want to stay here? It has changed my life. At the beginning of this month, I went back home for a week. There was a family reunion, and all of us got to be there except for one sister who was waiting for her first grandchild to be born. And it was an awesome time. And we always think that we're doing it for mom and dad, you know, all of us getting together for them. And every time we go, it's, I can't tell you how thrilling it is for me, and how every time, right before I leave, I cry because I don't want to leave my sisters. You know, and these are sisters that sometimes when I was out there, I didn't talk to them at all. you know, and I finally have a connection, and my sponsor has made sure that I have a relationship with God, you know, and like John was saying, it's not just a connection anymore, it's a relationship, and we work on it together. You know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't really think that, I knew there was a God, but I didn't think he wanted anything to do with me, because I was a bad person. Because I had broken that promise so many times, I'd make that deal with him to get me out of this one. This is what I'll do. And he'd always get me out of this one, and I never followed through. So I didn't think he really wanted much to do with me. And it talks about that in the big book, and it talks about that in the steps, you know, the different places that we get here and the different things that we feel about getting here. And the steps have changed my life. They have, it doesn't matter what is going on, you know. Most of the time now, it's not even about drinking anymore. It's always about living. And living gets hard when you're sober. Doing it drunk is pretty easy, you know. And but living is pretty hard. And every time that something goes on that I don't know if I can get through it, I call my sponsor and I do some steps, you know. I work on 6 and 7. I'm there a lot. 6 and 7, I'm there a lot. And but my life is different today. I have relationships with my children. I have 5 grandchildren. I got married again for the last time. But this husband had heard my story, and so he made me get the divorce. He wanted to see the papers. He's the love of my life, and none of that would have been possible without God's grace and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Coming here and having you guys tell me that I just needed to take some steps and things would get better. Just hang in there. It'll get better. Everyone kept telling me that. And I hung in, and it got better. And I took a step, and it got better. And I took more steps, and it got even better. And I have a good life today. I have a great job. I have wonderful children that call me once a week. 5 grandchildren, a wonderful husband, and a family that I just adore. And it's because of God's grace and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.